You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast from New York City. I'm Andy Bastillos. I was a guest on the last round in New York City, but today I am the guest host, and my guest is Rekha Shankar, who improv fans might know from her Lloyd Team Barrymore or UCB's Tour Co., also a writer for MTV's Decoded. Or you can catch her at the NYTF, New York Television Film Festival thing, with her pilot, Hustle. Rekha, welcome.
Hi, thank you, Andy.
You're very welcome. Did you appreciate that intro? Was that a good intro?
Yeah, it's really good and energetic.
Thanks. I'm trying. This room is very white.
You're telling me.
All right, Rekha, so let's get into the nitty-gritty.
Yeah.
All right, we're in the nitty-gritty now.
Great.
First question, okay? I think it's like a good start question. Why did you start doing improv?
Yeah, so I had just graduated from NYU, and I was working a night shift at Cash Cab, if you remember the show? The trivia game show in the back of a cab. So my hours were like 6 p.m. to 2 a.m., which would often translate to 6 p.m. to 4 a.m., and I was training a lot of assistant editors because the person they were hiring to work with me at night would always leave. I had four different assistants that worked with me as a fellow assistant editor. And this schedule that I was on, I was just asleep when all my friends were hanging out, and I was working when they were, like, we just never could hang out. I never saw my friends. And I was really lonely, and I was getting really depressed. And my friend, like, when I did overlap with people, they'd be like, yeah, I hung out with so-and-so and did all this. I'm like, I'm not doing anything. I have to sleep during the day.
Right.
So I was like, what can I do with my days? And I was like, you know, I have not felt myself get better as a sketch writer in a while. I felt like I tried it out in college and just sort of plateaued.
Were you like on a sketch team in college?
I wasn't on a sketch team. I went to NYU for TV and film, and I took all two comedy writing classes they had because I knew that's what I wanted to do. But I never got on to Hammer Cats. I never got on to Danger Box. I like hilariously auditioned for Hammer Cats three times. I was like, this is pretty funny. I keep getting rejected. That's a sketch, right?
There's a sketch in there.
Why I got rejected. I just felt myself not getting better. And I was like, you know, I've heard improv is supposed to be really good for this. Maybe I should try that. I don't know if I'm a performer, but I'll try it out. So I took 101 with Chelsea Clark, and I mean, it's the classic thing. I was just like, what the hell is this? I'm obsessed with this. And I was just at the theater all the time. The Beast had kind of just recently opened.
Okay.
So I was just there all the time. People thought I was an intern, and, like, I was just so immersed in it. And
you, like, front of the line waiting kind of person?
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Takes out their notebook during a show.
Oh, yeah.
Has the same seat. Gets called out at Improv Nerds on a holiday where no one is even in the city. There were seven people in the audience, and I was one of the people. Like, Phil Jackson addresses me by name from stage. That's how, like, into it I was. I remember once, too, it was like, there's like, Improv Nerds were doing a bit, and they were, like, talking, like, when is, you know, this improviser's birthday? And I knew, and I said it, and I was like, oh, my God, Rick, you're such a fucking
freak. So you were, like, memorizing,
freak.
Like, facts about people and performers.
I was such a freak,
yeah. Did you know, like, all the teams they had been on and stuff in the past?
I didn't know about the wiki as much. I knew, like, some basics, but not a ton. But I knew that, like, performer page, I would just, like, study that. I remember after Cash Cab ended, I didn't get another gig for a while, so I took two internships to fill my time. And during those internships, if I didn't have anything to do, I'd just troll the UCB website. And yeah, I was just so into it.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Do you still have those notes that you would take when you used to go to shows?
I still have, from the first day of 101, the improv do's and don'ts that Matt Besser passed out, like, to like the UCB curriculum distribute. I have the one Chelsea gave me, the exact copy, like, with me in my notebook.
Did you carry it around with you?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. Is it, like, covered in stains and stuff, like coffee?
For sure. Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's so cool. Is it, like a good luck kind of thing?
It's kind of just, like, I had it in my little, like, black notebook that I take notes in. Mm-hmm. And every time I've gotten a new one since then, I'm like, oh, I'll just transfer this over. And that's happened. I've had, like, 6 notebooks since then.
I love that.
Yeah, and I even kept all my, like, syllabi. I remember in 301, I raised my hand and asked Gavin Spieler, I was like, is there a syllabus for this class? He's like, I don't think so.
You're such a nerd. That's great. That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love that. Whenever I remember when I would go, like, seeing people take notes, I was always like, that's so smart. Like, you should be doing that.
I think, because
it helps you understand if you're like,
yes,
writing down what they're doing and why it kind of works.
Exactly.
Or why it makes sense.
I think at a point it helped me, and then I think later when I was feeling in ruts, I'd be like, oh, just go back to that. I think it didn't work for me going back to, I think it took me out to, like, be taking notes while watching something.
Okay.
But at the beginning, I do think it helped, because I would do weird things, like give myself random word-generated words and be like, make up an initiation.
Oh, yeah.
I would do that all the time.
You got to. Yeah.
Or, like, go over moves and be like, okay, this is what I could have – these are, like, 3 things I could have done that would be better. Okay. Like, and then I went to every jam. I went to both the Nerds Jam and the Grandma's Ashes Jam every single week. I even went to, like, pit jams. It's not even, but, like, I went to pit jams.
I even went
there. Can you believe? No, I went to, like, pit jams and stuff. It was just, like, yeah, anyway.
Yeah, you were in it.
I was in it.
You were fully immersed, ready to go.
I was immersed, yeah.
Wait, so you weren't working then at that time at Cash Cab?
Cash Cab had ended. So that ended about, like, halfway through my 101. And then I got a job at NBC right in the middle of my 201, full time. And my 201 was in the middle of the day. I think that's what happened. Yeah. Yep. Because I had to leave work to go to improv, and then I was allowed to come back to work to just finish up.
That's crazy that they were nice about that.
They were very nice about it. And I was working like 15-hour days at NBC while doing 201 with Brandon Gardner.
Jesus.
It was too much.
It's crazy to, like, think back how exhausted you should have been and how much you weren't.
I know.
When you were, like, really excited about, like, first starting out and stuff.
You're just so immersed. You don't have time to be exhausted. Yeah. You forget to, like, eat.
Yeah, totally.
Which I never do. I love eating.
All right. So that's like, your beginnings, right? How was auditioning and stuff for – because you're on Barrymore now.
Yeah.
On Lloyd.
Yeah.
And before that, you were on Southpaw?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was the, like, audition process like? What was it like for you?
I've auditioned 5 times. I've never gotten a callback until I got on.
Wow.
It was really – the first year I remember when I got rejected, I felt crushed. I didn't think I had a great audition, but I remember saying to a friend, I feel like the thing I love doesn't love me back. And it really broke my heart. And it was nice. A few days after that, I got offered Kaleidoscope. So that was, like, a cool little, like, okay, I guess I get to do this thing, which is really cool.
For anyone who doesn't know what Kaleidoscope
is. Kaleidoscope is an indie show that is at the Creek in the Cave. It was started by Alan Straczynski. And basically has a rotating, like series of hosts throughout the years. And there's a monologist, and people do sets off of them. It's kind of like an indie ASCAT, sort of. Mm-hmm. And it's been, like, a long-running show, and it's great. Tao Yang is the host right now, and he's awesome. It's been passed on from host to host. So Anthony Appruzzi gave it to me. And I remember when he gave it to me, I was like, oh, it's just because I'm organized. He knows I'm not going to fuck up the bookings.
Right.
By the way, everybody fucks up the bookings. It's very hard.
I can imagine.
It's a very hard job.
Seems very complicated, yeah.
but it was like, I remember, like, feeling that, like, fraud complex at getting it. And, like, oh, my God, everybody's like, why the fuck did she get it? Who is she?
Isn't that, like, that's a really strong feeling whenever you get – whenever
anything.
I get anything, all I think is everyone is waiting for me to mess this up.
Yes.
So they go, I knew they shouldn't have done that.
Exactly. And then there's this whole thing is just like a person of color and a woman of color in the community being like, ah, I'm a fucking diversity hire, like, to make this look like a more diverse place. All sorts of shit going through your brain. So that was my first audition, like, like data point. Mm-hmm. Then I got an invite that fall when Nate Dern was still the AD. I remember straight up, I was about to go into my therapist, like, session, and I was like, oh, this is a mistake. He accidentally emailed me, and this is going to be a really awkward, like, thing.
Like, even when you get it, you're like, this must have gone to the wrong Reka.
All the other Rekas are going to be so bummed. Because I was just like, I'm not on the radar. Why would he email me? And I had a terrible audition. Whatever. I did the invite. I had a terrible audition again. I remember we did a Herald, and it was just like, I was just so panicky. And I remember we were doing warm-ups before, and I was like, oh, my God, I didn't get past the clap, in this game. So, like,
head. Yeah. You forget, your brain kind of closes up, I think, right?
It completely closes up, and you forget to, like, interact with the people around you. Like, I've always done a thing where when I'm nervous, I kind of, like, become a recluse, and I, like, okay, I'm going to go hide in the woman's room. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not going to talk to anybody, because talking to people will make me, like...
Makes it worse?
Privy to their, like, industry. Like, when you talk to actors before an audition, and everyone's like, so, did you memorize a dramatic monologue? And you're like, what? like intimidation tactics.
Right, right.
So I would always just, like, hide. I wasn't, like, engaging on a person-to-person level. I was engaging on a, oh, my God, we're all going in for an audition level. So that was my second audition, which was really cool. my third audition back again in the spring, I remember I thought I did better. I didn't think it was great, but I thought I did okay. And I got nothing. And my teammate, I think, got a call back. My teammate who went in with me. And he's very, very talented. He should have gotten a call back. But I felt really dumb because we came up on the same team together. And I...
It's definitely a thing. Like, yeah, people you come up with. Like, if you see someone get it, then you're like, oh. And it's almost like, oh, they keep moving. Where am I?
Yeah, it was like, oh, the only difference between him and me is... I'm me.
Right.
Oops. Okay. I guess it's me then. Like, I'm the little, like, factor X. So that made me feel really shitty, even though I, like, was very happy for him. I felt really shitty and was kind of like, oh, my God, why? What am I doing? And I think I forget the exact chronology of events, but I, like, hopped off classes for a bit, maybe right before that audition. I think I had to, like, take a class really quick to even be eligible for that. Because when I did Kaleidoscope, it was very difficult for me to take a class during that whole, like, year. I was the first Kaleidoscope host to give up Kaleidoscope before giving on a team, I believe. Or, like, getting on a team in an official way or something.
Right, right, because that's, like,
the way you pass the baton. Right, right. And I remember kind of feeling like, yeah, I proved myself right. I was a fraud for hosting this. Like, I didn't get on. I didn't deliver on what I was, like, supposed to do, which is, like, so fucking unnecessary and dumb.
Drama is, like,
listen, all this drama. Yeah.
Everything is drama.
You know what? You take that drama anywhere outside of 26th Street and 8th Avenue, and no one knows what the hell you're talking
about. Right.
So,
but it's still very real. It's a real thing. And here it's real.
Exactly. In this little white room, it's real. Mm-hmm. So then I did not, I think, what was my fourth audition? I think I had to wait the whole cycle again. I auditioned again, I think. Because then I got – my fifth audition was my invite from Shannon, and that was this past fall. And I was like, oh, an invite. And I was so nervous. I was like, no, not this again. Like, I can't do this. I will be bad at this. I hadn't done a Herald. I hadn't taken a class in a little while, and I was like, I have not done a Herald in so long. I had come off of taking Control Chaos, which is whatever the opposite of a Herald is what Control Chaos is.
What was the form for Control Chaos?
There is no form. The form was like, we walk, it was an awesome class. It was taught by Don Finelli, mm-hmm. and it was like based on the Parentheses class from Chris Gethard.
Oh, okay.
So we would just walk onto the stage. We didn't even go on stage, actually. We sat in the chairs around the stage. And we could ask for a suggestion, or we didn't have to. Often we kind of just started very organically from like, oh, this person's like tapping their feet, I'll tap my feet. Like, oh, this person's blinking, I'll blink. Okay, what's this? And then like starting a thing from that. So all the shows were, we never took a suggestion.
That's so awesome
and
terrifying.
All 18 of us.
Jesus.
On doing it at the same time. It wasn't broken up into two halves, mm-hmm. for an hour. So we just, all 18 of us, have improvising for an hour.
What was, like, the weirdest or, like, craziest thing that came out of having to improvise this way?
It's, I mean, the crazy, like, we did a really great show the third show we did, people cried because it wasn't like improv, like comedy. It was just like very sad and touching, like real stuff.
Like scenes, yeah.
Yeah, and lots of like real secrets would be revealed and whoa, things like that. So it was very like honest improv. If it was even improv, it was very like performance arty, but a very like eye-opening class in terms of just like getting loose, which is the opposite of a Harold. That was what I had just completed before this invite and was like, oh, okay, we're going from doing like an 18-person sound and movement into like a Harold. So I go in for the audition, and I remember this moment before going in where I was doing it again, where I was like not wanting to talk to anybody, even though now I had been in the system so long, I knew the people I was in a group with, mm-hmm, whereas before they were all strangers. I didn't want to talk to anyone. And then I was
Do you like knowing the people or not knowing? Some people
like,
go in without, like, sign up randomly, and some people go in with their friends.
I used to like signing up with strangers so that I would have no expectation.
Right.
If I knew a person, I'd either be like, oh, I know that person. They're way better than me. I'm going to suck in this scene if I'm in a scene with them.
Yeah.
And so I'm like, if I'm a stranger, I don't know anything about them. They could be better than me, but I won't know that. So it doesn't matter.
Trick yourself.
So now I knew everybody. And I'm like, oh, everybody's good. But I remember I was talking to someone in line, and a friend. And I was like, why don't you try something different, Rekha, instead of tuning out because you're so nervous? Like, yeah, brain, I get it. You're nervous. It's not helpful for me to keep being like, no, pay attention to this. Pay attention to how nervous and anxious you are.
Right.
Why don't you
just
pay attention to people? So then I remember just asking my friend, like, oh, you went to this college, right? Like, did you like that? Did you like it there? And then I actually listened to her answer. And I was, like, way calmer.
Yeah.
Because I was just actually engaging with a person, you know, improv, before an improv audition. Yeah. And I went in, and I wasn't, like, 100% relaxed, but I think I was in a little bit of a better headspace than when I'm like, okay, don't talk to anybody. Hide in the bathroom until you hear your name calls. And speak to nobody.
Also, hiding in the bathroom.
I know.
Were you like in a stall?
I would either hide in the stall a little bit, or I would like hide in some corner of the library or whatever with like my headphones on is always my move. Headphones on, like reading or just looking at my phone, anything. Music super loud so I don't hear anybody's conversations. Just like, completely.
You can always feel like the nerves when you walk into like just the room. You just feel everyone is like super.
Yes, it's terrible. It's really bad. So I got my first call back from that, and I was like, I'm gonna fuck this up because I remember I got a call back for Danger Box, and I did not expect that because I had never done improv in college. That's the NYU improv group, yeah. Okay. And I was like, oh no, I can't do this. And I totally fucked it up. And so with this, I was like, no, please don't do that. Please don't do that. Just like go in. Like, you have been rejected so many times by this. It's got to be fine by now, right? And you know what's so dumb? When I got that first invite under Nate Dern, and I did a horrible, horrible scene in a Harold that had no game, and my partner carried me the whole way through and was brilliant. Totally unexpectedly, and I only realized this after the callback, the scene I did was the same game, the same lack of game. The game in both of the scenes that I did on one horrible Harold and one better Harold was somebody who gets like a nickname that's not a good nickname. That's not a game. Anyway, hey, word of the wise, not a game. So,
bad nickname, not a game.
Hey, not a game. So I couldn't believe it. And it was like this really nice arc when I realized it afterwards of like, I had more tools in my tool belt to know what to do with this game,
right,
and at least have fun with it. Whereas the first time I got it, I was like, this isn't a game, this isn't a game, this isn't a game,
and
all I thought
about.
So it was such a weird like thing. And then I got on, and I remember.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it was very cool. And I remember, though, even when I got on, when I got that phone call, I still was like, oh, I'm a diversity hire. It like all went back.
Still.
It all went back.
Yeah.
And
that stuff doesn't go away. It's like always in your head.
And people made those jokes to me too. And what's annoying is like, oh, they don't realize that I think that about everything that I have ever gotten. So how like shitty it is to hear it. So like I felt like very fucking insane being added to Southpaw. It was like a really cool team of people, but we were like that team had gone through four iterations.
Oh yeah.
And I felt like, oh my God, I gotta be good. I gotta be good immediately. Or like, I don't know, they've all been together for so long. So it was like very cool to be added, but also being added on is like no joke.
Right. It's tough because they've already established themselves as like,
exactly.
They know each other. They're
exactly.
doing shows.
And you were added at the same time as me
from
that same round.
Yeah. I was added in the middle of it. Yeah.
Exactly. So it's like very stressful to like be like, okay, I gotta get into the rhythm. Or
it's like you have to just hit the ground running. You can't like learn how to do
exactly. it. Exactly. Yeah. I haven't even performed in the Beast stage since like a 301 class show or something, or like improv nerds. That was an extremely long answer to your question.
No.
That was my audition process.
I love that there was like the fact that there was an arc to it is a really, really cool thing that you like in the moment you recognized, oh, I've done this, but now I know how to make it better.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, that's so nice.
Yeah.
All right. And now how do you feel now that you're like, you're performing, you do shows on the road, you do all these things.
Yeah.
Do you feel a lot more, positive about your place in improv and what you're doing and stuff?
I definitely feel better. And I do think Lloyd is still stressful in the sense of like wanting to like it feels like the show is sort of geared towards like teaching students what a herald is, kind of. Like, we do, like, a very traditional herald, no, like, bells and whistles, pattern game, you know, true third beats, all of that. So that I remember feeling like that was a lot of pressure. But now, kind of, I guess, Barrymore formed in April, so it's about 6 months in, I'm feeling much more like, oh, I just have to have fun. It is very possible I'll get cut in April, so, like, why worry? So now I'm having the like pleasure of kind of going and doing a show. And even if it is good or bad, that like nice feeling afterwards where you're not really thinking about every single move you made.
Right. You're kind of just in the moment.
Exactly.
Having fun.
Yeah.
That's definitely a much more freeing.
Yeah.
Start to actually go, well, I had fun.
Yeah.
Or maybe that nickname game
didn't work,
but like it was silly and fun.
Yeah. I got to like be funny with my friends, and that's like the fun part of improv.
Right.
Yeah.
That's like the part that I think is easy to forget when you're on stage because you're so nervous or trying to do such a good job. You're like, but also like I always want to do this because this is fun.
Exactly. So that I'm liking hitting that.
Yeah.
It is interesting though with doing Torco, you know, I've only done it for like the last couple months or whatever. Right? Is that one?
Yeah. Okay. Breaking even on Turco for 25 okay. years.
Holy crap. Okay. But I'm feeling those like that like arc again of like, okay, gotta be good. Like all these people have been on Turco and they're all really, really good. And it's like, okay, just chill. Like we had a Halloween party today. Like chill.
Right. So much fun. So much fun. What did you play today?
We did
characters, like improvised monologues with like props that were brought in.
Yeah. So I was a dinosaur that had a human baby dropped off. To it. And it didn't know how to care for it because it's a dinosaur.
And you carried the baby by its ears.
Yeah, because it had little tiny dinosaur arms. Can't carry it normally.
That's great. So you're feeling better about it. So do you coach and stuff now?
Yeah, I coach. I do a lot of subbing, but I coach a team called Room 31 right now.
Ooh,
they're great.
Shout out.
And I've like coached a few other teams like with like little patches when they're like, coach can't make it. I really like coaching. I wish I like had more time to be like a Sean Diston, like, okay, let's beautiful mind this. Like,
yeah, let's form
where
this.
Where are the spreadsheets where I can like test all these theories on all these teams? I don't know if that's what he did, but what I imagine he did.
Yeah, no, that is something. Yeah, my favorite coaches were always the ones who like came up with their own sort of things or like tried to.
Yeah.
You know, mold this group into a thing.
Exactly. Yeah. Like Phil Jackson coached my indie team for like 6 months and he would give us little homework assignments like, send me a picture of something that you think is beautiful. And we're like, oh, we love this. Or like, do something different, like take a different route home today or whatever.
Yeah.
I loved that because he was teaching us organics. So it was just like, this is great.
He did that with an indie team I was on too.
He
made us like, we'd have to like, write what we did the last week. He also got us Gethard to coach us, and Gethard made us listen to the same song over and over again until the following week. We had to say how many times we listened to it. And that was like fascinating to me.
Wow.
It was like cool, weird homework to get.
Yeah. Wow. What was the song?
It was a Mountain Goat song called Hail. It wasn't called Hail Satan, but
you've listened to it too many times. You don't know the name of it.
But the ending was like Hail Satan. And it's like, oh, the the greatest death metal band out of Trenton, I think is the name of the song. Or Texas, something like that. I forgot.
Trenton and or Texas.
I don't remember. I don't have a great mind. I love when like coaches kind of like try to mold you and stuff.
Yeah.
Going down that route.
Yeah.
What's like an exercise that you are like, this always helps me or is my favorite thing to work on or to get other teams to do when you're coaching?
Oh, man. I love doing this thing that Brandon Gardner taught in 201. I don't know who originated it, but it's where you have them, two people do a scene, and the second someone notices something unusual, either someone in the scene or someone on the back line has to raise their hand, and we talk about it, and we beat the shit out of it, and we're like, okay, so if that is the unusual thing, how could we label that? Okay, and what are some game moves we could do off of it? I think it takes – we don't even do this for the rest of the scene. It takes the pressure off having to perform the scene and shows that you can generate all these game moves without even – really think like they always do it so quickly,
right?
And the unusual thing is usually found in like two or three lines, or something that could be the unusual thing if you're just really listening hard,
right?
And I love that that exercise because I feel like it just shows you like, yeah, you think you're bad at game, but you're not bad at game,
right? You're just overthinking it.
You've got it when you slow down, which you are allowed to do. You've got it. So I love doing that. Yeah,
that's great because I think tendency when you're like starting out is like, what is the game? Is that the game? Let's push through. Let's try to make it instead of just like taking a breath and then saying a line.
Yeah.
Or just like listening and then trying to respond with some pauses in between.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that's great. I don't know what that's called either, but I remember someone making me do that. And I think that's on the Turco, curriculum.
Oh, for like teaching workshops?
For workshops and stuff.
Oh, that's awesome.
I believe it's on there.
Great.
Oh, yeah, that's great. That's great.
Yeah.
Any other exercises that you're, like, super pumped about?
Yeah.
Dig?
I don't know if this is an exercise, but I had a couple groups do this thing where I had them do, like, an inanimate object set where they had to be inanimate objects in every scene. And I the only reason I like that, one, I think it makes much more creative scenes because, like, someone will come on as, like, a pair of scissors and someone will come on as, like, a rug, and then it's like, oh no, they're in conflict already by just like who they are.
Right.
And I find that like when people are being objects, they are much more true to like what that character is because it's an object. So like they know, like the team I coach, they did this awesome thing where like someone was like a starfish trying to eat popcorn. And I was like really trying to emphasize like drop into the thing, you know? So she's trying to eat popcorn and of course she can't, the starfish is
what
limbs.
They can't bend their arms.
I mean, maybe they could, but hey, show me the tapes.
Yeah. Show us the proof. All right? email your starfish bending arm tapes to starfish@gmail.com.
Yeah, it's real. But she just did this beautiful thing where she was like, I guess, a dried starfish and trying to throw popcorn in her mouth because her limbs are like sticking out. And I was like, yeah. Like, I myself struggle with doing character work. But when you're an object, you know the way a starfish works or like a tape dispenser or something works. So like
you know the mechanics of that thing.
You're already being true to the character, you know, and not being jokey about it. And I just like love watching that so much. I think it like shows their best improv skills when they do that. So I love watching that and
making
them do that. Yeah,
that's a great exercise. Yeah, because then, I'm the same way. I don't do a lot of character stuff.
Yeah,
and that's like a great way to realize, like, oh right, I know how to do this. I just have to think about
what this thing would do.
Right,
like when it's an object, you know what its limitations are. But like, yeah, that happens with people too.
Right,
like a shy person wouldn't do this.
Would have limitations. To what they would do, or how they would behave in any situation.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, I also selfishly just love watching them do it. I find it really funny.
Love watching people play starfish.
Hi.
Yeah. There was I coached a team the other day that had, they were in a scene where they, like Martha Stewart wanted to like, instead of using just squash and like fancy photos for like, you know, I don't know, like cooking magazines or whatever.
Yeah.
She wanted to bring real models in who had like squash like heads. So the entire scene was just, she had to keep putting her head next to squash and pretending she was a squash. And I lost my mind. I thought it was the funniest thing. Because she just put her head down and like made her face as squash like as she could. really simple, but it killed me.
Yeah.
It killed me. Like seeing someone try to play an inanimate object or anything like that always gets me.
Yeah, it's that integrity. That integrity of the thing.
Like commit, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Like commit. No. What do you think is like your personal approach to like doing your good improv? What's like you're like, this is my like guide for myself? Yeah.
I remember once in a two-prov practice, I think Patrick Noth said this note when I was doing a scene, and he was like, what does this feel like? And I love that note because that's like stripping all like vocabulary and terminology away. Yeah, what does this feel like when someone initiates this line to me? When someone initiates, you know, we're either going to have pancakes or waffles. Like, oh, pancakes or waffles? Is this an ultimatum? Like, I don't know. It's just like that first, like, what does that, the way this person's phrasing this, like this or this? Okay, that strikes me as an ultimatum. Okay, that's my response. Like, I love doing the kind of like really listening to the first line and asking yourself what this feels like. Does this feel like a mom talking to me? Does this feel like, a spouse? Does this feel like something else? That I don't know if that's really like an approach, but I think that's why I love organics, because it really is just like based on feelings in the moment,
right?
Not on something I'm supposed to respond with,
right?
Like premise-based improv is. And yeah, I just love that aspect of it, that like someone that like it really feels like you're building a scene together when you get to ask yourself those questions of like, okay, let me like consider how this person said this, what their body language is, and say, what does this feel like to me? And that's how I will respond. Does it feel like we are two crime lords? Does it feel like we're two starfish?
this is what we're learning. Rick only does starfish scenes.
Sorry, guys.
That's your favorite thing.
I'm limited. like, what does this feel like is a very helpful question for me to ask myself. And I do think it's because I love organics.
Yeah. It's interesting that I think in general people tend to like organic stuff.
Yeah.
Even though that seems to be the harder, if you think about it, like when you're starting to do improv.
Yeah.
It's like you're starting with nothing and you're trying to build, and like it just seems a lot crazier than like a pattern game where you literally know what you're going to have to do. So it should seem easier.
Yes. Right? I think they can both be easy. It just depends on... It's so like show dependent, right? Like if you do a Herald where every one of your premises in the pattern game is awesome, you're like, I would do any one of these, right? Then it could be super fun to do premise-based improv. But sometimes you get stuck on a premise. You're like, I don't resonate with any part of this.
Right.
Like I like when I can inject like a point of view, like an actual opinion into like a Herald to an extent. Like this is something I actually think, so this will help. Like guide this, even though it's an insane scene, but like if it's something like
you'll have like an anchor,
exactly
that's like something you know for sure. At least.
Yeah, if it's like because sometimes like really, I mean like, and you love your team and like you help build it, but you're like, oh man, how am I going to do a scene where it's like hot dog princess? You know? I guess.
What is that?
I mean, that's actually good. Hold on, a
princess who inherited like a baseball stadium, and now she. So she works it?
Yeah, maybe.
I've already complicated this game.
Right?
Too
no,
much.
And it's like people will riff on it and be like, yeah, hi, I'm a hot dog princess. You know, bow down to me. And someone will be like, yeah, this is the princess of hot dogs. She's the best at making hot dog. And you're like, oh no, what
is
it?
Which is something
is she, yeah, which dog? Is it? Which is it?
No one can tell Reka is furious. Right
I'm
now.
So
She's
angry.
Mad. She broke a glass.
Yeah. But like, that's like the little catch with pattern games is like, oh man, what am I supposed to do? It's like, well, you're not supposed to do anything in theory, but like premise-based improv can make you feel a little trapped when you do get like stuck in your head like that. So those are the times when I'm like, oh, I love organics. I love like falling back on an organic thing. Like I remember during a show once, I got an initiation and it was referencing, I have not seen maybe any movie that anyone will ever talk about. The people I coach also know this because they'll be like, oh, I was like thinking about this movie like when I was doing this. I was like, I have no idea what that movie is. I'm so sorry. It was something based on a movie, and that always sends me into a little bit of a panic because I'm like, oh my God, please don't rely on me to like give you Star Wars specifics.
Oh yeah, or,
like,
that's my nightmare. Star Wars, Harry Potter specifics. I'm like, you're going to watch me drown.
Oh my God. I've seen all of Harry Potter and read all the books, and I don't know certain things. Like, it's just like people go really deep into those things, and I'm like, I'm too deep into stuff that, like, you throw me in a Frasier scene, I'm swimming to England. I'm floating on that. You throw me in a Star Wars scene, drowning immediately. So I had been given a movie reference, and I started panicking a little bit. But then I kind of just responded with a response I would respond with. And the game sort of like shifted. It was like sort of like that person would have been the unusual one because they were basically being this character from this very dramatic movie that I had never seen. So I didn't know what to like foil it with. But then I just kind of responded with like, well, I'm just a dad doing this. And like, it was like, oh, this person has a really boring life and this person has an exciting movie life. It became like the game. And that was like nice for me because I was like, I can play that.
And then you just have to wait for
that. And then you clearly know the movie and I clearly don't. So this like works for me. And those are the nice little things where like, okay, my deficiencies can actually be okay. And those are like those moments when I'm like, when premise fails, you can fall back on organics, which I like.
Right. Something personal, something that you can, or just look into the line and go, what does that mean?
Yeah. What does that mean to me specifically? Right. As someone who has never seen this movie or any movie.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever done. I think I end up always playing, like, very clearly, making it clear to the audience I've never seen the movie.
Yeah.
I go, oh, yeah, that thing happened.
Yeah, yeah.
And then that's the game, is that I'm an idiot who has never seen whatever they're talking
that
about.
That has happened to me so many times, which is why I've, like, I have to stop falling into this because it's going to happen every single day.
Do you like Hotspot? Is that like, I feel like that's also a thing that
I used to love Hotspot, and now I don't dislike it. But there are definitely a bunch of songs that I'm like, oh, I don't know what the, I like sing along for sure. Mm-hmm. It's fun. It can be super, super fun. It is not as fun as it used to be for me. You know what I hate? I hate made up Hotspot.
Oh, yes.
Made up Hotspot makes me feel like a big, dumb piece of poop. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't. Yeah, I cannot.
Love it. You said shit like 45 times. But this time you were like, I gotta say poop.
We gotta keep it like our level.
The back half of this podcast is gonna be PG, but the top half is nasty.
Exactly. Yeah, I hate that exercise so much. Fits me in my head so bad.
Have you ever done like musical improv or anything like that?
No. I actually, in Barry Moore practice the other day, Liz had us do, Liz Noth is our coach. She's great. She had us do like MGM musical style scene.
What does MGM mean?
I truly was like, oh, is this like Wizard of Oz like type movies, like those big grand movies? And she was like, yeah, totally like that. And I was like, okay, but to be clear, is this one of those movies that's like an MGM movie that's about a musical? So are we people in the movie doing a musical, or are we, is it a natural organic?
You've already complicated this like, so much.
I know. It's like, are we like organically like in a musical where they sing, but we're not acknowledging that they have just sung? I don't even remember what her response was. And yet I chose to initiate this scene, like whatever. And we were just singing. And I was like, I'm so bad at like musical type stuff. But you got to face your fears sometimes. I will hate doing a made up Hotspot, but I bet I'm better for it.
Right. I feel like
for trying it.
As much as I hate it when I'm doing it.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, at least I did it. And I'm sweating a little bit, but like, that's fine.
Exactly. Yeah.
I survived.
It's over. Yeah. I just need to do one song or two, one to two. Yeah. Oof. Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of those that, yeah, I try to avoid as well. Cause I can never remember songs in the moment.
Yeah.
And then I remember them as soon as I'm done. I'm like, oh yeah, I know the words to that song.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know
yeah.
every DMX song. I just forget them on the spot.
DMX Hotspot.
DMX Hotspot. I'm kidding. I don't know any DMX songs. So please no one make me do that. What's like the, like, I know for me, there was a moment where I had such a bad show that I didn't care. Like, I remember that moment specifically. It was at Triple Crown. That then, from then on, I was like, nothing will ever be this bad. So it took so much of the fear out of it because I was like, that failure is so much less scary now that I've hit rock bottom.
Right.
It was like a growing moment.
Yeah.
What's like a moment that you were playing in? I mean, it was definitely, obviously, in the audition when the thing came full circle. That's
Those are nice moments. Yeah. I'm trying to think of what my worst show was. I think, honestly, so many shows I've done, I hosted Kaleidoscope for like a million years and like a million years. I hosted it for like a year and a half. So many of those don't go well for like you as a personal individual improviser. And that's that one thing I'm happy about is that that has all like blurred. I remember in the beginning, I was just like, I was not funny tonight. Oh, I wasn't funny tonight either. Oops. 1 month of not being funny at Kaleidoscope. Oh, well. So that's nice that that's a blurred. I do remember this one moment at a Grandma's Ashes Jam. I was in a scene and Josh Patton was in it, and it was me and another girl who's jamming. And something had been set up already, and I gave like a jokey sort of response. It was like one kid gets a car for their birthday and the other kid gets like a really bad present. So I think I was the kid that got the nice, like, cool present. Mm-hmm. And I like just said something really jokey that was like completely tonally different from the entire scene. And I mean, nobody cared or laughed, and it was whatever, the scene came and went. But I remember afterwards being like, I specifically understand that I said that out of fear. I did that to be funny without caring what was actually happening in the scene. And you can get away with that sometimes, but it's also with this, you're operating on two levels when you do that at like an advanced stage where you can do those sort of fuck you moves, but also go back to the scene at hand.
Right.
And it wasn't a fuck you move. It just was like so totally different. I remember writing down in my notebook, because I would write down after jams scenes I did and things I could have done differently.
That's amazing.
I wrote down how like embarrassed I felt. And I was like, I remember also writing down, but my desire to get better outweighs my embarrassment for doing a bad scene. And that was what kept me going back, because I was like, I have to stop caring.
That's like a line
if I do a bad scene.
Read,
yeah, because I just want to get better. And I think there is some sort of like taking up space thing at work there where you're like, oh my God, I'm like taking up space on the stage, sucking, when someone else who's better could just be up there. And it's like, nah, man, you can't think like that.
Right.
It's got to be you. You got to be up there.
Right.
Like,
right.
If you want it, you have to be.
Right. So much of it is like also, yeah, just like believing that you're really like, I need to be amped up to do it. Like, I need to think I am really great so that I have confidence in myself.
Exactly. That you deserve to be there. Even if you don't think you're like at your peak or your best yet, you still deserve to be there. And that's really hard.
There's a reason you're there.
Exactly. Yeah. That's really hard. Even in a jam when you're like choosing to be there and you're like, oh man, everyone's so much funnier than me. Yeah, no, like, you deserve to be there. It's just this thing of, like, I have a thing where, like, I'm like, I like being productive. That is, like, I get a sense of joy out of that. So if I'm in a situation where I'm, like, sick or not able to be super productive on a given day, I will feel really bad about myself.
Wow.
And I think in comedy there's something really similar of just, like, if I'm not getting laughs, I'm going to feel really bad about myself. If I'm not being a productive comedian, I'm going to feel really bad about myself. And it's just like not helpful.
Right. I can just like build bad habits of just going, I gotta say something silly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's where that fear comes from. And that desire to be jokey rather than like being in the scene. And yeah, I don't know. I think it's just like you deserve to be there, you deserve to be able to fuck up.
Right. And it's like it's a different thing to be silly, but not make that choice out of fear. Make it out of like, I know my scene partner.
Yes.
We're going to have fun here. But
yes.
I also know how to continue the scene in the right path.
Exactly. Yeah. And there is even a flip side to that too, of this like being around long enough that people know you're just being silly. Because I remember having feelings of that where like, oh, no, I didn't mean for that. I meant that to be like a one-off thing. And now we're like talking about this, but nobody knows me.
So you don't know that was like a side, just
right?
Like a little,
To like wave you in and be like, oh, you're part of the club where we can joke around with each other and know that that's not the thing,
right?
And move on. That is just like part of being around. I've like felt that.
You start to understand how certain people are funny and what their like take on stuff is. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
So you started taking improv classes, because you thought it would help with your writing and stuff, right? So how has all of that now that you've been taking it for a long time and you know what you're doing and you know, you're doing great. How has that impacted what you're trying to do career-wise?
Yeah, I mean, it's helped with everything I've done with writing. I think I remember I took a comedy writing class in college, and I was reading books about how to write spec scripts from, like, freshman year onward. I was just, like, so – I knew that's what I had to do. So I wrote my first spec script in this class for The New Adventures of Old Christine, an old Julia Louis-Dreyfus show. And I remember when I got notes back on it, I thought it was a really good script. Or not, like, really good, but I was like, this is a good first shot. It was really hard, but I planned and I planned and I planned and I worked really hard and I got it done. My teacher's notes back to me were, you should redo this entirely. And I was like, whoa, because that class was you wrote a script and then first draft and then your final exam was writing the second draft of it, not doing a totally different script. So my final exam, I had to write an entirely different
script.
So I did. I chose the same. She said, choose the same show, write a different episode. So I did the same show. I wrote a totally different episode. I was like, I get it now. This was a little easier. I fix it up. This is way funnier. And her thing was she would send you the notes over the summer because it was like towards the end of the year. Mm-hmm. The opening line of her email for the notes goes, oh, Reka.
No.
And I remember being.
I would just delete the rest of the email.
I was at my cousin's graduation in St. Louis and I read this email. I was like, And it was just like, she said, I want you to have a thick skin, but like, basically saying the script wasn't good. And I was, like, destroyed.
Had other people read it? Like, had anyone else read it?
I think in class we read them out loud.
Okay.
But, like, we didn't – I don't think there was really, like, a workshopping process with the class. I think it was just, like, so you could hear it. I don't really remember. But I took another class the next year, another comedy writing class, and I wrote a community spec. And, like, no shame to the people that were in my class if somehow they're listening to this. But I did not understand. It was due the week after spring break. I was the only one who came in with their script the week after spring break for 3 weeks. We read my script for 3 weeks.
Whoa.
There were like 14 people in that class. And we read my community spec for 3 weeks. It only takes one class to read it.
Oh, my God.
And my teacher tapped me on the shoulder after class and was like, hey, you're really good at – this was after we finally read other people's scripts. He's like, you're really good at, like, development stuff. You should just, like, know that. And I was like, did I get better? That's cool. Because my scripts fucking sucked last year, apparently. So then, oh, and in between that summer, I took it upon myself because I was so depressed. I was like, I'm going to write a South Park script by myself independently over the summer. And it took me so long, and it was bad. So then I wrote this community spec, and I thought it was really good. Mm-hmm. So I was like, I got to send these to fellowships. I sent them to all these fellowships. Actually, my computer broke the day before my first day at NBC. And I thankfully sent a PDF to my friend like 2 days before.
Oh, my God.
But I had to get my computer fixed, which was going to take a week. So I borrowed my roommate's computer, installed Final Draft onto it, retyped the entire script by 5 a.m., went to NBC by 9 a.m. the next day for my first day at work, and then left at 3 to go to Improv 201 and then came back to work. It was insane. And I submitted to all these fellowships, got rejected from all of them. Then I was like, no worries. It's fine. I've heard. This is the game. Mm-hmm. Wrote an Archer spec. It's like, wow, this is getting better. I like found this guy's website where he like breaks down an easy like process on how to what steps to take to write a spec, which is my jam. So I did all that stuff, which includes watching the entire series, taking notes on every episode, every A line, B line, C line,
whoa,
printing out the scripts, marking a number of pages devoted to each storyline. I did all
which
this
you
shit.
You were doing watching improv. And
exactly. Yeah. I had Excel spreadsheets of all this shit.
Wow.
And I did all of that. And then I submitted my Archer spec, and it got rejected from all fellowships. And then I was like,
no one can see this, but Reka's movements are very, like, confident, like, I got this.
Then I was like, no worries, girl. I got this. I was like, I'm going to come at you with a happy ending spec. So I wrote a happy ending spec. I was like, holy crap, this is the best thing I've ever written. This is good. I sent it to my friend, who's, like, a really, really good writer. And she was like, hey, I don't know how to tell you this. I don't like this storyline. I was like, cool, no problem. I changed the entire storyline in like 2 days, and I sent it to my other really good friend who's a good writer. so that she could, who had not seen the original, and she goes, Rekha, this is amazing. This is so funny. And that Happy Endings was like her favorite show. Mm-hmm. She's like, this part made me like cry laughing. I was like, this is it. This is it. This is my year. I submitted to fellowships. I got rejected from all of them. I was applying to the Late Night Writers Workshop. I got rejected twice. I was applying to Writers on the Verge with NBC. I got rejected. And then I remember Phil Jackson got a job at Key & Peele. And he was still like kind of coming back into the city. I met with him. I asked to meet with him on New Year's Day of whatever year. I don't remember. And he did, because he's very nice. And I was like, what the hell should I do? What am I doing? And he was like, you got to write a pilot. And I was like, I can't write a pilot. I don't know how to do that. He's like, I wrote a pilot. And like, this is how like I got some stuff. And I was like, okay. And so I started stewing on some pilot ideas. And I was just like, I really just don't know how to write one. So I never really brought myself to do it, but I continued to submit to other things. Like, I submitted onion packets, and like I did video producing for Clickhole at one point, like actually something that got fucking accepted. I was still working full time at NBC, and I was getting really tired and bogged down with that. Right. So I quit after like 2.5 years or so and started doing freelance. And then finally one day my buddy James Cross, shout out, sends me a thing. He's like, hey, I saw on Facebook Decoded is looking for writers. And I was like, cool. Let's see what I have. I was just like so exhausted. Right. I've been rejected just like 3,000. Even when I applied to college, I got rejected from, I applied to 12 colleges and I got rejected, or no, 11 colleges. I got rejected from 8 of them.
Your story, your like bio is going to be called Rejected.
Yes. So then James sent me this thing and I was like, okay, I'll buy it. And I like looked through my stuff. I was like, here are some sketches I wrote that are like cool. And I punched them up. And then I feel like they just asked for a couple sketches. And I sent, and a video. And I sent them a video I had done with my buddy James and Jordan Mendoza and my friend Christian in this group we have called Dumb Video. And they took it. And they're like, yeah, we like you. And I was like, no, you don't like me. What? That's crazy. Don't you mean,
did you mean
no?
One of the other Rekhas?
Don't you mean you're rejected again? And I was like, whoa, this is a win. And then a month later, I got onto Lloyd. And I was like, whoa, cool, a win. This is nice.
Yeah.
Oh, the
starts
other
to fall in.
How the other half lives. Okay. And also, while this is happening, a manager reached out to me. And she was like, hey, do you have a pilot? And I was like, no. And she goes, write one. I was like, okay. So then I signed up for a Scott Reynolds class, and I wrote my pilot, Hustle, which ended up, I like liked it a lot, but Scott really encouraged me and was like, hey, this is good. You should really go forward with it. And I was like, whoa, I really trust his opinion. So, okay. So I submitted it to... I have this long ass list that's like hanging above my desk of every place I've just flushed all my money down to submitting fees. Probably like 10 to 15 contests.
Wow.
Rejected from all of them. So funny. And then I like remember the first time I got rejected, I was just sobbing uncontrollably. And I said, it's not my script that's not viable. It's me that's not viable. My ideas aren't viable. That's what this is. What am I supposed to do if everything that I think is funny and that I write is not viable?
Right.
And I was like really panicking. And then I got rejected from my second one and I thought the same thing. And
it's crazy that you don't, it doesn't get easier to get, you're not like, oh, I'm fine.
It's like
still is a painful thing.
It's really painful.
It's your ideas.
It's like getting rejected. Maybe it's like per idea after you get certain amount of rejections per one idea, you could stomach it. Because I got rejected from a million more after that. And it was like, of course. Okay. I get it. Austin Film Festival. Okay. And then I was just like, I subscribed to Scott Reynolds' newsletter. And he had this one about motivation and how like discipline sort of creates motivation. So just being like, no, I gotta write today. I gotta do this thing because I have to is how you get motivated. You don't just get like struck like, you know what? I'm gonna crank out 30 pages right now.
Force yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. You really do have to just make it part of your routine. And I was like, I remember just reading that and I was also just debating whether I should do my pilot on my own, trying to like film it. And I had met with like a friend who had gotten her pilot like in a development deal at Comedy Central and she was giving me advice. And I was like, I think I just got to do it. So I like ran to my laptop after – or like I was like reading it and I just like started sending emails immediately like that hour about like to my friends who had read it and be like, would you help me film this in a short capacity because I can't film a 34-page pilot for $90,000 or whatever.
Right.
All my friends said yes. And then I started immediately putting out like casting calls. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm doing it on my own. And then I get into the New York Television Festival. Like 2 weeks later, I was like, what the fuck is happening? Okay. I was like really excited, but yeah. I did not expect that whatsoever. And they were just, that's been going on this week. I don't know if when this podcast will air, but in the last-ish week of October. And it's been really great. And it's just like such a nice like, oh, this script was likable.
It was viable. My ideas are viable.
And that has been very rewarding.
Yeah.
And yeah, it is still this weird. Now I'm in like another new thing where I'm like, I have no idea how to perform at a television festival. Like I'm talking to all these like industry networky people and like there's certain things you're supposed to say and not supposed to say. And like
there's no one's coaching. No one tells you this is how you should behave.
Exactly. Right? Like I don't even like unless we're having an actual like conversational conversation. I'm like, I don't know if you actually like me, if your boss told you to meet with me,
right.
Like, if you actually want to represent me, if this is a diversity hire thing where you're just like, we're looking for brown talent. And, like, just, like, all these questions are going through my mind. And, like, but I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying the festival. Like, one little reward after, like, 1,000,000,000 rejections.
Yeah.
I'll take it.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That, like, do you think because you, through improv, you were, like, took a bunch of tries and all this kind of stuff, it kind of made you more, like, it made it easier for you to continue to stick around and keep working on it as opposed to being like, well, I should give up now.
I think in part, yes. And I think it also made things less precious. Like, I remember my friend said that to me in high school when I got rejected from all these colleges. She was like, this is going to sound stupid. I told her she said this. She has no recollection of it. But she's like, this is going to sound stupid right now. But in like 10 years, when all our friends who got into like Princeton and stuff on their first application are trying to do stuff and they fail. And like, this sounds weird, but you've failed a bunch already. You're going to be like, yeah, I know what this feels like. I know how to keep going.
Yeah.
And I think that is true. I think I forget it every single time it happens,
right.
And then I have to like pick myself up or force people to pick me up because it is just so jarring every time it happens. But to an extent, that is true. You do just keep going. And then also, my pilot was born out of frustration with it's about two women of color who can't get a break in anything. Because that's me and my...
So writing from experience.
Yeah,
yeah,
I'm completely
totally.
Writing it from experience. My roommate is also a woman of color in film, and she also is, like, constantly working, like, 15-hour shifts. She used to, like, have to walk her boss's dog, even though she's, like, a producer. And, like,
whoa.
It's like, get out of here. This is not part of her
Jesus.
Job description. She's getting, like, $100 a day working 15 hours. Like, give her a break or a fucking promotion.
Right.
And, like, we would just talk about this all last summer. And how we're like, we're doing it right. But you would never think so, but what we're doing, like
right.
with the response we receive. I've like worked jobs where I trained the people I was working with and they get made more than me. And I would go up to someone and say like,
Jesus.
Hey, can I get equal pay to this person?
Right.
They'd say no. And it's like, okay. Like, you know, I say, hey, I have a really good script that I think is really funny And they say no. It's like the same thing. Right. It's just like, so that like really motivated me to write this thing that I am now really proud of. And then it is hilarious to have to go through the exact process described in my script while having the script. Because right. like someone, yeah, I don't know. I've just had people who have read the script be like, oh yeah, all these like women of color face these kind of obstacles. Like, you know, just like fuck that. Like, right? I'm like, yeah, fuck all those obstacles that make it hard for me to get paid. Yeah, you're right. Like, this is what my script is about. You being a type of person that says that.
That's would say that, yeah. Oh, that's awesome though.
Yeah.
That you were able to like, yeah, use it for good.
Yeah, right? Hopefully.
Learn from every single thing that has happened.
Yeah, right. Rejection.
Rejection is gonna be the title of this.
Podcast. Yeah, please. Use my
UCBR.
I hope my Google like search results come up with rejection. If you type in RE into your Google search bar, I want it to be equal amounts rejection and rake up.
I was gonna say, if they both start with the same first two letters.
Yeah, not a coincidence.
Not a coincidence. I think we're getting towards the end of our time.
Yeah.
So if people want to catch you, where should they, you know, let's give some plugs out.
You're, yeah. So right now, I do have a pilot at the New York Television Festival, which is really awesome. Ooh. Finally. Woo. And I'm making it into a shorter form series. It's called Hustle. There is a Kickstarter up right now if you want to check it out or any of the other associated videos. I have videos on my website, rekashankar.com, on my YouTube, which is youtube.com/penguinsandfiber, because YouTube won't let you change your handle no matter how old you were when you created it.
Wait, Penguins and Fiber?
Yes.
What does that mean?
Oh, I wish I could tell you. I've been trying to change it since college.
Oh, that's so funny.
I also have a video group called Dumb Video with Jordan Mendoza, Christian Resti, and James Cross. And at Reka Shankar on Twitter, RekaShankar.
Wow, radio voice comes out at the end.
Hey,
you brought
man.
Out your Delilah at the end.
Yeah. Hey, all you callers.
Oh, that was really good. That was great. And I everyone out there, I think that was our long form UCB conversation. All right, tune into the next episode. I'm supposed to know who the guest is going to be, but wait, no, because this is all I've ruined everything. You know what?
Hey, just go like this. okay. Just go tune in next week for another great episode.
You got it.
Oh, this is stressful.
All right. And tune in next week for another great episode.
And then you can thank your guest.
All right. Wait. All right. Leave all of these outtakes in, please. These, yeah, okay.
Sure. Okay.
I think it's funny. Okay,
outtakes. These are the Andy intakes.
These are the don't let Andy lead anything because he ruins stuff. All right. And that was a long form conversation. Tune in to the next.
Oh, my God.
One more time. Get it together, Andy.
And this was a long form conversation.
Well, Delilah's here.
Tune in to the next episode. See you guys then.
And that was a long-form conversation. Tune into the next episode. My name is Andy Bustillos. My guest was Reka Shankar. Everything is wonderful. If you get rejected, keep going. Don't give up. And eat a sandwich today. That's my sign-off.
Great.
You know, the classic callback line, eat a sandwich today. You know how many times we've said that during the podcast.
You've been listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at ucbtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.